Hello, and welcome to the Gator Radio Experience, which is being broadcast live on the Gator Radio channel of the Castalea Internet Radio Network. The Gator Radio Experience is a student-run radio produced project produced by a team of students from Castalea School in Palo Alto, California. My name is Annie, and I am a student at Castalea. I'll be hosting with Natalie, and Mr. Montaigne is working in the background, streaming our show's Skype conversation through Ustream. Today is Wednesday, December 9th, 2009. Thank you for joining us for our final regular show of 2009. So now we will move on to our interview. Today we have David Cardinal, a professional photographer who leads safaris to all around the world to photograph wildlife, architecture, and the people who live there. Welcome, David.
Thanks.
So could you tell us a bit about yourself?
Sure. I was a software developer and a high-tech executive for a long time, but for the last 10 years, I've been a professional wildlife and nature photographer, and I lead trips to Southeast Asia, Southern Africa, Alaska, Texas, and teach people how to photograph wildlife and cultures and some of the environments we find there.
That's really interesting. Hi, I'm Natalie, by the way. So, can you tell us a bit, so why did you choose these particular places, Southeast Asia?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've been kind of all over the world, and these are the places that I really love and that I want to share with people and that I think have something special to offer, often in terms of being endangered environments or having endangered animals. I think the parts of Southeast Asia I go to are unique. I mean, they're changing, and the people are wonderful, and they're great to see firsthand. Cambodia and Burma, especially, and then African animals are just unique in the planet. There's nowhere else you can see that variety of wildlife. In Alaska, we're able to get out with the grizzly bears, and they're really the last big amazing mammals of North America in a lot of ways. So each place is special to me, and these are the places I want to share with people and where people could get good photographs.
Yeah, so you mostly photograph animals and wildlife and plants and stuff, right?
Well, in Asia, though, it's mostly temples and people and cultures. We don't do wildlife there, but in Alaska and Africa, it is mostly animals.
Yeah, because I myself have been to Cambodia, and for me, the most breathtaking part of it were the people, and a lot of the times, unfortunately, the pain that they experienced because of the genocide. And was it hard for you to when you were there, especially, or in Burma too, asking people to if you could take their photograph, or was it? You know, because, you know, it's a different culture over there. It's not just like us where everybody can photograph everyone.
Yeah, well, it's a tricky thing. And I don't know that I've really totally come to terms with all of it, because one thing people in poorer parts of the world start to do is equate you're taking their picture with them getting money. Right. And at some level, that's okay, because, I mean, if fashion models pose for money, they get money. But at another level, it's very much not okay, because if it's kids and their parents are basically putting them out there to try and get photographers to pay them,
right,
you could be ruining the kid's life. So we try to go to a little bit more controlled environments in some way, like orphanages, where we can make a donation to the orphanage and then maybe work with the kids and see things there. Or we go to villages where people are just amused by the fact that someone wants to take their picture.
Yeah.
So you have to go to places that are a little bit different. And many of the younger women, especially in Southeast Asia, are very shy, and they don't want their picture taken, and that's fine. So it depends. A lot of the kids love it. If you show them their picture in the back of the camera on the LCD, they think it's hilarious. They pretty much will just film themselves if you let them, in some cases. So it varies tremendously, even hour to hour or day to day. And there's no single set of rules or guidelines, I don't think, about how to do that perfectly.
Yeah. That's really interesting. How did you get into photography in the first place?
Well, I've been photographing since I was very small. My grandma got me an Instamatic when I think I was in second grade. And then I was in scouts, and my scoutmaster worked for the people who did all the environmental photography for the government. And he taught us all how to run a dark room and an enlarger and take pictures. And so I had my own dark room set up from the time I was in junior high school. And I've always loved it.
I can see you there, kind of.
Yeah. So, David, you were recently in Southern Africa. Could you tell us a bit about that trip?
Yeah, this trip we went to one place I've been a lot, which is Botswana, and I love going there. And another place I had not been, Zambia, which is next door, but a very, very different country. Zambia is the other half of Rhodesia from Zimbabwe, which has become quite famous or infamous recently, and is not really well run, but is much better run than Zimbabwe, but still a very poor country, and is just really trying to come to terms with ending corruption and starting tourism and getting serious about ending poaching. So it's really a transitional time for them. They're trying to change from a poor country with a lot of copper mining. I mean, they do have one big industry, which is copper mining, to a country with a real middle class and real jobs and real pride. But it's not easy. It's still very easy to bribe people there to do things they shouldn't. And it doesn't have a lot of infrastructure yet. Versus Botswana, which is the world's largest supplier of diamonds. And as a small population, and as a result is doing pretty well for itself. Mm-hmm. And as a well-run government, and is quite a well-organized country. And we also spent time in South Africa, which had a lot of wealth in the form of gold and diamonds, but those are mostly mined out, and now is sort of searching for how they're going to keep the hopes alive of the nearly 100 million people they have in the country without any major industries. So it's been tough for them. They have very high unemployment, and they have kind of a rough road ahead.
Definitely. When you say we, do you travel with a group, or do you take your family? Or
I lead photo safaris, so I take clients and often a co-lead with me. But so sometimes I have another professional with me. And then I have groups of people who come with me to learn how to photograph those environments. So there's always a group of people.
And sometimes you take your family.
Yes, that's true. Last year, I got to take my family with me to Burma and Cambodia, which is a lot of fun. And a couple times, they come with me to Alaska as well. And Texas, even.
Mm-hmm. Aw, that's cute. Even Texas.
Yeah.
Going back to the to South Africa, and have you seen the remnants of mines and what those are like? Or not South Africa, in the rest of
Zimbabwe? Yeah.
The remnants of which?
Mines.
Oh, yeah. There's you can't really avoid them. There, a lot of the mines there are huge strip mines. So as you fly into Johannesburg or whatever, you see massive, massive holes in the ground. And some of them are still being worked, but they're not yielding the same kind of money they used to, and not enough to keep the country going or keep Johannesburg going. So maybe 20 million people have come to Johannesburg initially because of the gold rush, if you will, the mining industry and all the mines. And now there's a few mines maybe still working, and some are now museums, and most of them are sort of shut or just big holes in the ground, but there's nowhere near enough to keep people employed.
Yeah.
In the chat, we have a question from the chat room. Lori D asks, what's in Texas?
Oh, birds. There are a lot of birds that only come up to the very south part of Texas and the U.S., so there are a lot of ranches there you can rent and photograph birds.
Ooh. What's your favorite thing to photograph, or person, mineral, vegetable?
Well, I'll tell you, I pick my trips carefully, so they're all some of my favorites. I love the variety of animals you get in Africa is unparalleled. you just, I mean, around every corner there could be a leopard and then a lion. Or we had, this year we had, for example, one morning we were watching a small pride of lions and their ears perked up. And we realized it's because they heard a pair of mating leopards up in a tree nearby. And we could see the leopards. And the lions are enemies of the leopards. They try and drive them off the territory. So the lions started stalking the leopards, who didn't realize they were there. And then another male leopard, about a half mile over, also heard the mating leopards. And so he was stalking the mating leopards because he wanted to drive this other male leopard out of his territory. And so you have this whole situation where the female leopard, the mating couple, doesn't quite realize they're being stalked yet, but they're being stalked by two different groups. And then the male leopard goes forward for a while and then realizes there's lions also, and then he's scared of them. And so that's unique. And then Alaska and the grizzly bears is very unique because we can actually get out on the ground and work with the grizzly bears fairly close on the ground, which is definitely an adrenaline rush. And then Southeast Asia, I think the people there are just so friendly and warm, and the temples and the culture are so deep and rich that they're all my favorites.
Mm-hmm. We're it sounds like the lion leopard event was very, very cool, but also, you know, it could be dangerous. Have you ever gotten into any kind of risky situations with some of these wild animals?
Well, in Africa, typically we're in vehicles, and it's very, very rare, almost unheard of, for the carnivores to attack people in vehicles. And in the daytime, we're careful, and we don't let the clients get far from the vehicle. We might stop to have a coffee break or something, and we make, but in the daytime, most of the critters are not that aggressive. We don't irritate them or alienate them. I mean, the hippos and the elephants can be the worst if you irritate them. And at night, we're very careful about where we go. You don't go walking around at night. So you do want to take precautions, because obviously many people do get killed by hippos, or kill more people than anyone in Africa, and moose kill more people than anyone in Alaska. And so in Alaska also, we're careful around the bears and the moose, and everybody gets a safety talk, and there's a safety protocol, and they're always with a guide, and you do want to take precautions. But, you know, the same's true if you're driving down Highway 101. I mean, you know, somebody could swerve and hit your car. So, you know, every day something could happen to you. But we've never had an incident. So it's, you know, we try and take good precautions and not endanger the animals or us.
Mm-hmm. Have there ever been any times we've gotten a little closer to an animal than you wanted to?
Well, we don't tend to approach the animals too closely, but they then could choose to approach us. And we've definitely had many occasions where, you know, the bears will start to come close to us, and we'll have to kind of stomp our feet or clap or whatever, not the clients, but the guides and myself maybe, and make sure they leave us alone and understand we're there. So there's that can certainly happen. And even with the lions, even if you're in the truck, if one of those lions really stares at you, it's a little chilling. I mean, you know, rationally that he's never going to come in the truck and bother you, but you know, you get a real sense of it's a 600-pound carnivore just looking at you, thinking, you know, yeah. I wish I knew what to do with that guy. He might make a good meal.
Yeah. That's probably why a lot of your pictures, I'm looking at your Flickr right now. These are really beautiful pictures of the ones in Africa. I'm pretty sure we put the link inside the chat room. And you've got a lot of bird pictures here. So the good thing about those is a lot of them won't come and try to eat you.
Yeah, that's right. I think except for the Hitchcock movie, people are safe from birds for the most part.
Yeah, and there are a bunch of the lions too. They're very, like, the ones really close up. Like, do you kind of just zoom for those, or are you actually that close?
Well, ironically, the one of the problems is they can get too close. So several times we had lions literally right next to the truck, but you almost can't photograph them looking natural then because you're kind of looking down at them or at an angle. So you do need to zoom in on them when they're at a little bit of a distance or up on a mound to get them looking natural. But they've come, they can come very close. We've had a leopard, if any of you have seen the documentary Eye of the Leopard from National Geographic, we've had the same leopard actually come directly underneath our truck while they were stalking an impala because it was just, we were kind of in the way and she just went right under the truck. So you could shoot right down on her. I mean, you could have reached down and pet her if you wanted to.
Wow.
But you can't, it's hard to photograph that, make it look like it's natural because it's straight down. So that is one of the tricks is actually they need to be a certain distance so you can get eye level shots and make them look natural.
So that's really important to you is that they have to look, well, it's kind of silly for animals, but they have to be candid as in, you know, it doesn't want to look like, you want to make sure that they keep distance in their natural habitat and so forth.
Yeah, you want to make them, if they're predators especially, I think you want them at your eye level. You don't want to sort of be looking down at them like they're in a zoo or a cage or a pet because they're not. They're big, wild predators. I don't like doing captive photo shoots, so I don't go to there are places where you can go and they have these animals and let them loose for you to photograph them, and those are the ones you see in all the movies and stuff like that. But it doesn't give you the same feeling. So I'd much rather have them doing their thing when they're relaxed in the wild and pursuing their normal daily lives, which is one nice thing about the pairs. We're at ground level with them. So you can actually be looking up at them or at them. And that's much more representative of their life than just shooting down on them as if they were in some cage in a zoo or something.
Yeah. Very true. There's a question from the chat room from Mr. Montaigne. Is there a concern about animal to human habituation? How do the wildlife managers prevent this? Do they set safari quotas?
Well, that's a great question, and it totally depends on the country, the park, and the area. The areas we use are all private concessions, so they're leased for many years by a company which has a strict quota of how many of us can be there. So there's a very limited number of like two or three trucks in an area that might be 20 miles by 20 miles. And no hunting is allowed in those areas. All the hunting permits are bought and burnt or shredded by the company that leases them. And so great care is taken. And then in terms of the animals, you have to be very observant because the animals are smart. And they've started to learn, like, for example, some of the impala realized that where the trucks were is often where the predators were because the trucks were kind of following the predators around to photograph them. So when they'd see a truck, they'd get nervous, and that would hurt the hunting of the predators. So we had to learn in those parks to not stay with the predators while they were hunting and lay back, and then maybe after they hunted, we could go up and see what happened or whatever. So it's an issue, and even Lagodima, the leopard from Eye of the Leopard, has gotten pretty aggressive with people on the ground, and we had a guide changing a tire where she came up and almost wanted to play with him, and I think that's pretty unique. I mean, she was followed every day by a National Geographic film crew for 3 years, and she's been on TV around the world, and sure enough, it changed her behavior to the point where she wasn't all shy and everything. And so I do think that's a legitimate issue. And it is something everywhere that people do this, they have to be careful of. But mostly like with the bears in Alaska, it's a positive thing. The bears are less nervous around us. They're less likely to attack. They're habituated. So they're calm around us. So it has worked out pretty well. But it is a two-edged sword and something that people have to pay attention to.
Definitely. Yeah, I can see that. Do you have a favorite picture from your Africa stream?
Oh, boy. I don't know. The problem with having a favorite is that almost always it involves a memory of the place and the time. So, you know, my favorite might be more based on what was happening around me than the photograph itself. So it's okay. It's really hard to say. I mean, it, you know, it just brings back a lot of good memories and a lot of fun stuff we did. And like the elephants mating in the Zambezi River were kind of cool. They're not the best photographs there, but it was pretty unique to be right in a little boat right next to these mating elephants in the water.
Yeah.
Yeah. Were there any especially cooperative animals this time around?
Well, let's see. The first leopard we met was not cooperative at all. She was a female, and she had a cub she was trying to protect. So she gave us some great pictures, but not because she liked us. It's because she thought the truck wanted to eat her cub or something. So she's looking at the front of the truck the whole time. The big male leopard, when he was stalking the other two leopards, was very cooperative. We got some great photographs of him, and he was so focused on driving the other male off his territory, he could care less about us or anything else. I mean, he was very focused on that other leopard. So mm-hmm. There's always some animals that are, I think, uniquely cooperative each trip, and then some that are really shy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Speaking of lions, can I just say I love the picture? I don't know if there's a number, maybe, but it's the called like MA_lion_9461, and it's like the lions playing with each other, and one of the lions has like his paw, like, or her paw, completely like hitting the other one's face, so she's kind of like, ah!
That's, like, oh yeah, yeah. I think the lions are, they're really fun. The biggest problem with lions is they tend not to get active until it's almost dark. So a couple of things happen. One is most people have gotten bored and left by then. So you're sitting out there and everybody's going, how come we're watching these sleeping lions? And so for like an hour or 2 hours, sometimes you've been watching these lions sleep. And then suddenly they get up and they get really animated and they start to hunt. They start to talk to each other and nuzzle. And it's just really incredible. But it's often starting to get dark, so it's a little hard to photograph. But they're amazing creatures, and they're social. Nature is pretty amazing. It just, they don't tend to do a lot of that stuff during the day is the toughest part about photographing them.
Yeah.
But especially the cubs are great.
Patience is a virtue.
Exactly.
Lori D says to ask you about the dung beetle.
Oh yeah. I didn't upload any video of this. I probably should at some point. The dung beetles are a highly underrated part of the African fauna. They're about a 2-inch long beetle, and they take these balls of elephant dung, which are about 4 to 6 inches around, and they manage to mat them down until they're round like a billiard ball, which is amazing. So they turn them into these slick round things. And then the female dung beetle picks one and just holds onto it. And the male, it needs to push that huge thing 3 times his height easily with his hind legs, with his head down in the sand, push it to somewhere that the female thinks is suitable to dig a hole and bury it, which is where and then she lays the eggs in the dung beetle, in the dung. And then the eggs are nourished from it. But watching this little guy try and push this huge boulder with his wife, or whatever you want to call it, his female, on it. So it runs over her. She doesn't care. And he'll get it partway up a little hill, and it'll fall down, and he'll go flying and have to go back and try and push it up again. And they just go at it and at it and at it. It's hilarious to watch. It's definitely entertainment.
Sounds good. / Grody.
Yeah.
Hold on. We have any questions from the chat room?
There's some more. LJC102 asks, what are the constraints from the Burmese government in planning trips there?
Well, not too many, really. You can't go to the areas that are still considered unsettled, but most of those are so remote that most people don't want to go there anyway. As long as you stay in the settled parts of the country, there's really not much in the way of restrictions at all. It's a lot easier if you use a licensed tour guide, because that way they know you're with somebody and you're not going to just wander off and like start holding up protest signs, because they don't really care what you do as long as you're not actively protesting against the government. Other than that, you're fine.
Oh, and Mr. Montaigne, oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Mr. Montaigne says that you were very keen. He says he was keen on the dogs. So he wants to know about the wild dogs.
Oh, yeah. These are amazing. They're trying to rebrand them. They're called wild dogs, and they're highly endangered. They're wonderful creatures. They're very social. They are the animals from which many of our dogs were genetically derived thousands and thousands of years ago. But when people hear wild dogs, they think of like feral dogs in our country. So now they're starting to call them painted dogs or African painted wolves. But they're very rare. They're one of the more endangered carnivores or predators on the planet, because they get a lot of diseases from our dogs and they share food. So if the adults kill something, and we saw this happen this trip, which is pretty cool, they will gulp it down and bring it back and regurgitate it for the pups, because they can't like carry it in a backpack. So they have to sort of swallow it and you know, spew it back up.
Cute.
And of course, that means that if one dog gets sick, they all get sick very quickly, because they just have infinite contact with each other.
Yeah.
So they're very susceptible to disease, but they're amazingly social. They're a pack animal. They hunt as a pack. They're quite ferocious, but also very playful as pups. And each one, the coat is different, so they can tell each other apart by sight. So the coat is like a fingerprint for them, because they don't. Wild dogs don't bark. Man taught dogs to bark or bred them for barking. So wild dogs communicate by sight and smell mostly. So they hunt in the bush really by sight and smell with each other as a pack. So they're very cool. They're being bred and reintroduced to as many parts of Africa as possible, because they were nearly extinct, probably going back 10 or 15 years. And they're definitely heavily studied, and people are working on breeding them.
That's really interesting. Are those the ones that you photographed with the meat?
Yes, that's right. Yeah, that was the adults. It was a really fascinating pack, because typically dogs like California quail, only the top pair, the alpha female and male, breed out of the whole pack. And so they only have one litter of pups between all of them. But in this particular pack, two of the females had given birth. And when that happens, one of two things occurs. Either the alpha female kills all the pups of the other female, or she takes them as hers and she actually feeds all of them. She has 18 little teats and she can actually feed a couple litters worth of pups. So in this case, to grow the pack, she took all 12 pups, hers and the other mom's, and was raising them as hers. So there were 21 dogs in this pack, including 12 puppies. So they'd gone and gotten an impala, and the nine adults were bringing back pieces of the impala to the pups, who were waiting anxiously, like you would imagine, for very hungry little puppies, for the food, and were all excited and coming back and fighting over it and yelping and running around, and it was quite a commotion.
Uh-huh. I mean, you really seem like you know what you're talking about. Before you go on one of these trips, do you like really read up on the animals you're gonna see, or do you just had an interest in them from the beginning, or like how do you learn about that?
Well, a little bit of both. Obviously I go on the trips because I'm interested in the animals. I do a lot of reading about them in general. I've been photographing some of these animals for like the wild dogs for 12 years now. And it is part of my job as a tour leader to know these sorts of things and be able to help people figure them out and get a better trip for themselves. So it is part of my job to learn about them and stay informed and I do some work with biologists and, you know, try and keep in touch with people who are doing some of the research. Right. So that's part of, just like everybody has to learn something for their job, part of what I have to learn is not just photography. It's about the environment, the culture, the people, the animals, all those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Mr. Montaigne asks, how are wild dogs different from hyenas?
Boy, yeah, they're pretty different. Hyenas are much bigger and stronger, and they have jaws that can actually crush bone. They're much slower, so they cannot hunt with speed. The dogs can literally chase down an impala at close range sometimes, or outrun it over long range and bring it down. The hyenas are not very fast, but they have tremendous crunching power. They're huge fighters. They don't, I mean, they're sort of, they're not pack animals exactly, but they do, they're somewhat social. They'll bring in other hyenas to help them if they need something. They're nocturnal. The dogs tend to hunt more in the day because they want to stay out of the way of the lions, but the hyena tend to be nocturnal. They're kind of social, and they hate each other. We actually were there when this pack of dogs accidentally discovered a hyena den with pups, and it was quite a big dust-up.
Oh, gosh.
So they all went at it, a lot of yelping and growling and running and fighting. It was night, so we couldn't see all the details very well. But the dogs were scared of their pups, for their pups, and the hyenas were scared for their pups, and it was quite a big deal. But the hyenas are, on the one hand, kind of similar, but they're not really dogs, and they're not dog-like. They just kind of look like dogs, but they're certainly interesting creatures. And in terms of survival, I mean, the hyenas are able to eat anything. The hyenas can eat carcasses. The dogs won't typically eat carcasses. They like fresh meat. They like to hunt. The hyenas are happy to eat whatever they can get, basically.
And in the chat room, we have a question from Great News. As a tour leader, do you train people before they go out on the tour or during the tour?
Some of both. We exchange a lot of emails beforehand and work a little bit, and I give them some tips about going up to the zoo and photographing and what equipment and all that sort of thing. And then we usually spend the first couple nights of the trip somewhere where we can do some kind of controlled mini safari stuff in the morning, and then look at the photographs and do talks. I bring a projector and screen, and we look at images and talk about wildlife photography. So we kind of ease our way into it and make sure everybody's at a good level before we launch into the main bush safari.
Yeah. Great.
Is there anything else you'd like to add about your trips or photography?
No, not particularly. Boy, I mean, I think it's a great, in some ways, it's a great excuse to travel because it gives you something to do wherever you are. And I think that's, for me, that's a neat thing, too. It's a way to record things, but it's also a way to force you to pay attention because you're actually, instead of just kind of looking, going, oh, that's nice, nice animal. I mean, so many people go to these places like, oh, I've seen a lion, I'm done. But the minute you say, well, I want to photograph a lion, well, what does a lion do? Or, you know, what should I photograph it doing? Or what would be a good photograph? Or you suddenly, you know, it causes you to want to learn more about whatever you're photographing.
Right.
And I think that's really the important part. And so the people we take learn so much. Like dogs. I mean, the first time people see dogs, like, hey, it's a dog. But once they learn all about how special they are and why they're endangered and why they're unique, I mean, people get much more interested in preserving them or conserving them, and it's really a valuable educational tool. And the same for countries too. Instead of just going and saying, oh, there's a village, like, okay, let's photograph the village. What's the family like? And there's grandma, and what tribe is she from? And what's her dress? And, you know, what it just causes you to learn so much more. I think that's really valuable.
Yeah. Do you feel like sometimes you can miss some of what's going on because you're busy trying to find the right photo or or catch this? Like, do you feel like sometimes you just kind of want to get out from behind the lens and kind of just take it in and memorize it with your brain?
Yeah, there's no question about that. You can't be in the scene totally and photograph the scene totally. And I've noticed that, I mean, I'm not a war correspondent, but I have been in a couple situations in Southeast Asia on my own where I was in a position that was really dangerous, but I wasn't, you don't think about that because you're behind the camera and you're thinking about getting the shot and you're so absorbed by that, you're not even paying attention to the reality of the overall situation.
Yeah.
So there's no question that's a trade-off, and you need to be sensitive to that. And if you're on a trip for vacation or whatever and you're not shooting for National Geographic, you can do plenty of both. You can shoot for a while and relax and look. And I do think that is important, is for people to realize, hey, you are in Africa, you are enjoying yourself, or you are in Asia, you are enjoying yourself. Don't stress over the photographs. If you're at this tribal wedding or novice initiation or whatever, you know, it's just enjoy the moment too, and you have to do both.
What was the dangerous situation?
Oh yeah, well this is, I have a couple of these, but my favorite, which,
a leopard?
No, not the leopard. This is a buffalo. This is my nomination for the Darwin Award. I was in a place called Taraja, which is a Christian enclave in the middle of Sulawesi, which is an island in Indonesia that Alfred Russel Wallace was famed for sort of exploring. And they have a tradition where at funerals they sacrifice water buffaloes. And I really wanted to get a photo of the guy killing the water buffalo with the crowd, because a huge crowd, the whole village gathers behind him, kind of this Ernest Hemingway Death in the Afternoon shot with the blood and everything. And I had the whole thing in my mind. So I'm on the ground looking up at the water buffalo and the guy with the big machete as he's sacrificing the water buffalo. And I've got the crowd behind him. And he does his thing. And it didn't occur to me that the water buffalo doesn't exactly just like kick and fall over. It goes nuts. So the water buffalo just stomps towards me. It just, you know, bellows and it's bleeding and it's coming right towards me.
Oof.
And I'm on the ground, of course, laying down. So there were some logs behind me where the rest of the spectators were behind the logs. So I managed to flop over behind the logs, and all's well that ends well. But the reason it was stupid is the funeral was for a man who had been killed at a funeral by a water buffalo.
Oh my God.
I would have known that this was that there was a chance of a bad thing happening.
Wow.
But, you know, if I hadn't been behind the camera, I never would have been laying on the ground 6 feet from this thing. I mean, you would have been like, what, am I nuts? But it's like, no, I want to get the shot. Here I am. And you just take yourself out of the scene and you go do it.
Yeah. So
go ahead.
Just finally, do you have any tips for beginning photographers?
Yeah, just go out and shoot. You know, there's no substitute with whatever you have and whatever you're passionate about. Go out and keep working at it and do it, and then think about it logically. And if you don't get the shots you want, think about why or what equipment you might need. I mean, a lot of people buy a lot of gear they don't need, but sometimes you need certain equipment to get the shot. And don't be too hard on yourself or worry about it too much. I mean, it's a great hobby. It's a great passion. If you want to do it for a living, it's a great career in some ways. It's not the easiest way to make a living, however. So I wouldn't necessarily encourage people to lurch off into it except for fun. But, yeah, just go out and do it and do what you're passionate about and just keep trying things.
All right. So thanks for joining us, David, and we'd love to have you back on the show.
Sure. Well, anytime. You're very welcome.
All right. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye. So listeners, you can learn more about David and at his website, cardinalphoto.com. So should we move on to news, Natalie?
Yeah, sounds great.
Alrighty.
can hear that.
So I guess this is our last.
Sorry. So as we were saying, this is our last show of 2009. It's time for our second annual year in review. First, we have a few news highlights for the year. So
that we came up with like 5 minutes ago. So we were not covering everything, but.
Yeah. If there's anything of note you guys want to talk about, you want us to talk about, or you think is of note, then please let us know in the chat room. So, first, of course, in January, we had President Barack Obama inaugurated as the first Black president of the United States.
Woo! And one that popped to my mind was that in June, pop singer Michael Jackson died at the age of 50 right before his final tour.
And, and you can see him in that tour in the movie This Is It, which I think Mr. Montaigne saw. Thought it was good, maybe?
Yes, it's a great movie, according to
him. And the Yankees beat the Phillies in the World Series for a record-breaking 27th win.
Wow. And Where the Wild Things Are, the classic children's book, was adapted into a heartwarming film.
I heard it was fantastic. And the soundtrack, apparently, was off the chain. And
yep.
New Moon was a teen success, breaking the box office wide open. If you were anybody, you had to see that movie.
I think it had the most midnight sellout, like the largest midnight showing ever in the history, like pre-orders.
Yeah, my whole cross country. My whole lacrosse team went to see it in Arizona when we went out. That was like our treat for winning.
Yeah, a lot of people in my grade went to the midnight showings.
That's so funny.
yeah.
And so, Annie, now that we're done with the important stuff, of course, like New Moon. Just kidding.
Very important.
And Annie will review the Castellaya pantomime.
All right. So last weekend, I stage managed the now annual tradition of the Castellaya pantomime. For those of you who don't know what a pantomime is, it's not a mime at all. It's not quiet. In fact, it's more like a musical parody satire performance where it incorporates various songs and fairy tales. It's traditionally based off of a common fairy tale. Like last year we did Cinderella, this year was Aladdin. And it is a British tradition, thanks Laurie D. This year's production was Aladdin. It was completely written by Anna Wynum with help of some other classmates for music. But Anna Wynum wrote the lyrics and the script and directed and produced. It was amazing. And the show was fantastic with lots of energy, laughter, and audience participation, which is another big component of a pantomime. And the amazing thing about this pantomime is that it was completely student run and produced and written, and it's nice to know that students can bond together for such a cause. In this case, we donated our proceeds to the Smile Train, which is an organization dedicated to providing dare to care and healing cleft palates. So we raised over $2,000 with this production.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I unfortunately didn't get to see it, but I heard it had great reviews.
Yeah, it was really fun to work on as well.
Mm-hmm. That's so fun.
Yeah.
And yesterday, wasn't that the winter concert?
Yes, the very exciting winter concert at Castellaya, where all of the sixth grade and seventh grade choruses sing songs. The middle school and upper school orchestras played traditional music and regular Christmas songs and. I don't know. The upper school chorus sang as well. So
yeah, the honor chorus sang. Yeah, I heard that was great too. Even though you guys stole away three of our players for our basketball team.
I'm very sorry about that.
It's fine. And in case anybody cares, the Castellaya basketball team won our game versus University yesterday, and that now our team is 5-0, so we Woo! Have yet to be defeated. we might broadcast the varsity game on Monday versus Notre Dame San Jose, I believe. Yeah. on Monday, but we'll have to see next Monday. So yeah, you should all tune in for that.
Yep.
Are we going to go on to music now? Is there anything else?
Mr. Montaigne, do we have music? Sam, our regular music person, was unable to get music for us this week. She's been really busy as well. She was in the pantomime as the evil villain. She did a great job. So Mr. Montaigne has two songs. We're not sure what they're called yet, so it's a surprise.
Oh, and that's my cat. Okay.
I like cats.
Can you hear them whispering your name? It's so lame. Can you see them all dressed up the same? Who's to blame? Superficiality, no common ground for me. Can you hear them now whispering my name? Fake hellos, real goodbyes, neither one a truth or lie. Happy no, when that I'm not like them, I'm not like them. Close my eyes, start to cry, no tear falls from either eye. Oh my, oh my. I. Can you see them? Picture them as kids on a playground. Do you hear their laughter? No remorse. Mama speak so proud. No superficiality, it came with everybody. Now they're just sad, she's all glued to the ground. Fake hellos, real goodbyes, neither one a truth or lie. Happy no, when that I'm not like them, I'm not like them. Close my eyes, start to cry, no tear falls from either eye. Oh my, oh
Lucky Today by Lido Beach, and our next song, oh sorry, that was My Oh My by Lido Beach, and our next song is Cloud Cult's Lucky Today.
Oh
So this concludes today's show. Go ahead.
Sorry, I thought you were serious when you said we were going to play the David song. Just kidding. Anyways, yeah, so thanks to the Creative Commons for the fantastic music. Creative Commons also provided our intro music this week. So this concludes today's show. You've been listening to episode 24 of the Gator Radio Experience. We thank everyone for listening and contributing to the content of the show via the chat room. You can check for updates, podcasts, and show dates online at gatorradio.blogspot.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/gator_radio. Please remember to visit... Okay.
Yes, I was going to say thanks to David Cardinal for joining us on the show tonight.
Yeah, shout out to Dave. Thank you. Please remember to visit our blog and to leave comments. We'd love to hear from you. Join us next week on Monday, December 14th, maybe, for our coverage of Castellaya's basketball game. Woo! We've been broadcasting live on the Gator Radio channel of the Castellaya Internet Radio Network. From all of us here at Gator Radio, I'm Natalie.
And I'm Annie.
Thanks for listening, everyone.
System to its knees.
By Tirad. Triad.
T-R-Y-A-D?
Yeah, Triad. Yes. Tirab.
Triad.
Anyways. Yeah, so right now we're going to bring on our friend Jeff Libo from Busan, South Korea, just to say hello. Hey.
Hello.
Did I say your last name correctly? Libo. Lebo. Ah, like
but
Lebo
Witt. I answer to everything. Yes. Oh. Got chopped off at Ellis Island.
So, what are you having for lunch, Jeff?
We just ordered from Jung Udong. We're having chamchi kimbap, which is like a, it's kind of like a California roll, but with tuna. instead. Yeah. And tteokbokki, which is kind of like these spicy rice cakes. It's very popular with high school kids here, actually. You get different shaped rice cake tubes and chunks, and it's in this really spicy sauce. And udon, which is the kind of the noodle soup.
Yeah. Cool.
So, and it will be delivered free of charge. The whole thing will cost, I don't know, maybe $9. And we're really hungry.
So Mr. Montaigne says to ask you about your last 4 weeks and what you've been up to.
Well, we sold our house in Bow, New Hampshire, and packed up 6 years of our life and sent it toward Korea. And then we visited my sister in Las Vegas, which was always fun. And then we went to Honolulu for a few days, which is just a lovely, lovely place, and hung out at the beach and had a nice time. And then we flew into Korea a day and a half ago.
Why did you decide to move there?
I had lived here before. My wife is Korean, and I had lived here for 9 years, and we went back to the U.S. For a few years for family reasons, and now we are back, and I'm very excited. This is my first webcast participation from Korea.
Ooh, first of many, I'm sure.
And I have to say, you Gators are sounding smoother than ever.
Yeah?
Yeah, I just caught the end of the show, but man, that was some smooth webcasting.
Thank you. It took us a while.
I hope it hasn't gotten boring. Is it still exciting? Do you still have to, you know, sit on the edge of your seat for some crisis to happen, or just no problem?
We have crises all the time.
Annie's. We're supposed to be professional. Of course not. We handle it like champ.
No, yeah, it's very smooth.
Mm-hmm. And great tunes as always. Once we kind of settle in and everything, there's a lot of World Bridges projects I'd like to focus on. One of them being Youth Bridges. I would love to have a group of young people, some Gators, some other people from wherever, just kind of playing their favorite tunes, talking music, and who knows what other kinds of programs. But I think you guys are doing some great modeling.
Thank you. That would be really great, really fun. We've we've talked to other students around the world, but it would be nice to actually really collaborate with some.
Yeah.
So, yeah. That's great. And so it sounds like you're adjusting really well, and the food, always a highlight. Oh,
the food, indeed, has been a highlight. The bureaucracy, we have to get our ID cards, and I think we're going to have to go up. We're in Busan, which is the second biggest city, only 5 million people in the southern, southeastern part.
A mere 5 million.
So I think we're going to have to go up to Seoul to deal with some of that stuff. But it's exciting. We've been living in this tiny town of 5,000 people, so to be in a big city again and be able to go out and enjoy city life has been fun.
Yeah. And not meaning to sound cliche, but how's the weather over there?
It's a lot warmer than New Hampshire. It's about 50 degrees Fahrenheit. A little drizzly this morning. It's kind of like, I don't know, Georgia weather. You know, it's kind of like it gets a little chilly in the evenings, but it rarely snows.
It's warmer than it is here right now.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
It's 35 in California.
So
freaking
cold.
Are you Californians okay? Do you know what to do? Do you have jackets?
No, everyone's freaking out. Nobody knows how to deal. Everyone's like,
it snowed. Oh.
Everyone says, well, I guess I should put away my flip-flops now. Well, I guess I should wear pants, even though it's blasphemy over here. It's crazy. It's been snowing, too, like Annie said, around Porto La Valley and places that are really close. I had ice on my car window this morning that I had to just scrape off with my bare hands.
Like, I could see snow from my house.
Insane.
Exciting.
I can't normally see snow.
I spoke with my mother in New Hampshire, and she said they just got 11 inches of snow yesterday, so it was a snow day. Or today. It's tomorrow here, so it's today there was a snow day. The time zone thing is a little different.
That is crazy. Can you believe it? It's like
I am talking to you from the future.
Exactly. Back in time we are. Oh, that's insane. Mm. And you made me hungry, too. I'm really hungry.
Yes, I should probably sign off, but thank you very much for bringing me on. It was great to connect with you all. And this is a great time to catch Gator Radio here in Korea. I'll start spreading the word. Build your Korea fan base.
Oh, sweet. That would be really great. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks. Always and enjoy your lunch.
Thanks. Yeah. Take care.
See you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
So I'd like, Mr. Montaigne, would like us to announce that Gator Radio has been nominated for an award.
Woo! It's
really exciting. I'm trying to find the details on that right now. But basically, it's Mr. Montaigne is getting our details. But I guess in the meantime, we'll recap our show today. So we interviewed David Cardinal about his photography and his wildlife safaris and his recent safari to Africa. Then we had our little year in review because it's our last show of the year.
Some
music from previous people we've had on the Gator Radio Experience and
And then we talked to Senor Jeff Libao from Busan, Korea. Telling us a little bit about how it's been going there. And, of course, going to spread the word about Gator Radio, give us our fan base over there in Korea, which we've been really targeting right now. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. So we've been nominated for the Best Educational Use of Audio 2009 in the EduBlog Awards, and there's a link in the chat room where you can vote for us. There's also some other great places there, but we're the best, obviously. Yes, spam your networks for us.
Yeah, and get the word out. Let's do this thing.
It's awesome that we've been nominated for something. It's great.
Yeah, it's an honor in itself. I mean, who would have known our little, school radio show just blowing up after just a year and a half?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, great. I guess we should wrap it up.
Yeah.
All right. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And we love to we might see you on Monday if we have enough people to broadcast the varsity basketball game at Castalea. Unfortunately, it's right before finals, so we probably won't have as many broadcasters as we normally do. Hopefully we'll have that. If not, then we'll see you in the new year. So have a great winter break and new year, and we'll see you then.
Merry Christmas, Hanukkah.